Moncrief on News Talk.
Time again for four questions, where we look back over the weekend and forward to the week ahead. The four questions are: what delighted you over the weekend? What annoyed you over the weekend? What did you learn? And what are you looking forward to? The people here to answer those questions are Donal O'Donoghue and Maya Dunphy. Good afternoon to you both.
Afternoon.
So, Donal, you were delighted by a trip west.
We went west yesterday. So Jodie, who is 13, is in the Gaeltacht at the moment. And one of the things you can do is you can rescue them at the weekend and take them out for a day trip.
Yeah.
So we headed west. We were blasting the tunes all the way down. We were doing Saw Doctors, N17, the Joyce Country Cayley Band. We had the Two Johnnies, with everybody that made us feel all of the greatness
about
being Irish.
So you were stereotyping everyone who lived outside Dublin then?
The stone walls and the grass was green. So we were giving it all that. But anyway, we went down, we picked her up. She's having a great time. And actually on the way down, I was kind of mentally preparing myself to use the Cúpla Focal. So we stopped as soon as we got into Connemara, there was a little place where you could get a coffee. So we stopped there and I kind of had G'd myself up to kind of go up and say, you know, cappuccino, August cup on tail at the hole and all that. And the girl said, how are you doing? I said, oh, not too bad. So we didn't get a chance to use it there. But anyway, we went down. They're having a great time. They're reconnecting with their culture. And then we decided on the spur of the moment, because you've got them from 11 in the morning and you drop them back at 9 at night. We're like, what are we going to do to kill the day? So we went out to the Aran Islands, we got the ferry out, and it was absolutely incredible. And again, I was kind of practicing with her and saying a few words and trying to get the Cúpla Focal going. And we went into a restaurant, we had a burger and a Coke. And of course, the guy serving us was Polish. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to actually get the Cúpla Focal going. But it was just great to reconnect. And we put her into Kilchiron, which is basically as far west, like an hour west of Galway. So like as far into the Gaeltacht as you can go without ending up in the Atlantic, like proper Gaeltacht.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And does she like it?
She loves it. She's having a great time. She met these girls from all over the country there. She wasn't giving anything away about the fellas because we were asking about the shifting.
That's the thing. That's what you go to the Gaeltacht for.
Well, that's what I thought. But no, they seem to be having a great time. Absolutely loving it. And lovely group of kids. And they you know, they've had their show Faisiúnta. Mm-hmm. Fashion show.
Yeah, you got that, very nice. Yeah.
And they've had their Kayleys and they're loving it. So
I love that you say the Cúpla Focal. Your first word was cappuccino.
Yeah. What is the Irish for cappuccino? I don't know if there is.
Were cappuccino awling.
Maya, were you in the Gaeltacht?
I wasn't. I never went.
Oh, no.
My mum was Spanish, so our house wasn't really a Gaeilge house. Actually, I hated the idea of it. You should watch a film called You, Mingus, Annam Dum.
Have you seen it?
My friend Dan O'Hara made that film 25 odd years ago. And it's exactly what you said there about. Anyway, if you can find it on YouTube, You, Mingus, Annam Dum, really, really good. Didn't go to Gaeltacht. This weekend, I did, also driving and also going away, I was in the UK. But what made it a big deal for me was I got the ferry and I drove onto the ferry, and I only learned to drive 3 years ago. So it's the first time I'd driven a car onto a ferry and did a huge big drive in the UK, and nobody died. It was fantastic. I know that the bar is low.
Were you super nervous doing all that?
Do you know what? I learned to drive 3 years ago at 46, old dog, new tricks. And everyone said to me, oh, you'll never learn over 40. Don't even bother, which is really unhelpful. Mm. And I did. But I have noticed that when you learn to drive older, like later in life, you have to make sure that you don't get intimidated by going on the motorway, by going on country roads, by doing these things. So even though they drive on the same side, obviously, most of the time, it was still daunting because I have a little 13-year-old micro, and it was a 6-hour drive from Holyhead to Windsor, where we went to Legoland. So it was
which is a big deal. I know several people have gone there with their kids and they absolutely adored it.
Yeah, it was great.
And why were you so late learning to drive? Or was there just no need in your life?
It was one of those things that I learned when I was 17, didn't do a test, and then just, I don't know, I blinked and 30 years went by and I don't know how it happened. I bought my apartment, but the car park space was a huge amount of money extra. I moved to London. Nobody drives in London. Then I came home and I realised I can't drive and I'm suddenly in my 40s. But it's never too late. And this is what I want to say to people, that when you do learn, don't let these things scare you. So the next thing now is we're going to go to France and drive on the other side of the world.
Whoa, now that's, that would be more scary.
It was great.
That's
and
more
ferry travel, we went with Irish Ferries, they are amazing. But ferry travel as a foot passenger was open to me, but now it's opened up whole new world.
It is brilliant. We did it a few years ago. We did Alton Towers and we went from Dublin Port over to Holyhead, drove up to Stoke, and we did one full day in Alton Towers and one full day in the water park, and the kids still talk about it. And as I said at the time, the ferry is a great way to travel. Until I then saw those people that got stuck on the ferry. Do you remember when there was the really bad weather and they couldn't dock either side and it was just, yeah, so that's slightly put me off.
Well, it's better than dying in a fiery ball.
True.
If you're on a plane. Now, did you have a good instructor?
I did. A man called Alan from Southside Driving. I was saying it to Donald outside that it's when you learnt, and when I should have learned all those years ago, it was easier. Now you have to do these EDT 12 lessons, which it's quite a lot and it's very expensive. And you can't drive on your own without a driver with you. So it does take a long time. But he was very patient and, it was great. So...
Did you pass in your first go?
I did not.
Okay.
I passed it on my first go. There was a lovely instructor and I started talking. And after a while he went, I think you should stop talking and concentrate on the driving. And then the second one, I started talking. I said, sorry, I know I should stop talking. He went, no, you can chat if you want. So it depends,
okay, well,
depends
good.
On the instructor, I think.
Because funny enough, we're talking a lot about cars today. That was the thing you learned this week, that learning to drive is really hard, or harder than it used to be.
It is. I think it's harder than it used to be. And I think about this stuff quite a bit, sadly, because I coach people in different areas. And okay, so I had an advantage when I learned to drive. My dad was a driving instructor, so I was pretty obsessed with driving early on. But as soon, when I turned 17, I was insured on the car. I did a few lessons with my dad and then off I went. And you kind of made your mistakes, because back in those days, you shouldn't drive, or you shouldn't have driven on a provisional, but it wasn't really enforced. So you just kind of got out there and drove, and after maybe 6 months did the test and I was driving every day. Whereas now I'm teaching Lauren to drive. She's 17. She's had the car for a few months at this stage. She did her 12 EDT lessons and it's just different because she's can't drive unaccompanied. So unless you've got a parent or guardian or whoever there to go with you, the learning just takes place far more slowly. So I know technically it's probably safer that people have a certificate of competence, a driver's license, before we unleash them on the road. But in the old days, I think you learn more quickly.
But practicing.
Yeah. How do you find teaching a family member to drive?
Stressful. Yeah, I would say. No, she's very good, but it's all down to practice, isn't it? And it's just harder to practice now than it was years ago. So I'm sure it's probably an unpopular opinion, but I'd say kind of let them get on with it.
Yeah. Well, in the first month after passing my test, I felt I learned more than I had done in the previous few months. I mean, the instructor was great, but just getting out there and people beeping at you, you know, making a mistake, small mistakes.
The thing that's mad at the moment is if you look at the questions on the theory test, like there's questions like, for example, how would you check your brake lights if you've got no one to help you? And the answer I would have thought of is you would see the little warning light that you've got a bulb out. Mm. But the answer they're looking for is reverse up to a reflective surface and pump the brakes. So the stuff like that, or it's asking you,
how do you find a reflective surface?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, have you ever reversed up to a shop window to pump your brakes? I'm just checking my brake lights.
Or you have? Yes, I have.
Okay. Or there's other ones like
to do that, Maya, or for some other reason, or no, just to check your brake lights.
Yeah, and see what offers are in the window.
Yeah,
it's an off license, you know.
Ooh, look, yeah, that's nice. Right. So you were outraged by drink glasses.
Yes, outraged is probably a little bit strong. I'm going to stick with annoyed.
Well, there was drink involved, so it might have easily turned outrage.
It could have turned outrage. So this is just something that just kills me. And Maya's shaking her head at me here. But whether it's alcohol or non-alcohol, it just kills me. If you go into a bar and you get your Guinness in a Bulmers glass, or you get your Coors in a Heineken glass.
So pedantic.
I don't know. I just think the drinks companies, they spend all this money. Like, how difficult is it to get the Guinness into the Guinness glass? They're investing in their brands, and you wouldn't go into McDonald's and get your Big Mac in a Burger King wrapper. So I don't know. Just I got to the stage this week, and then the other thing, and now Sean is frowning at me. The other thing is when you get your drink and they don't give you a beer mat with it, and then you've got Guinness dribbles or whatever. Do I need therapy?
I always carry my own beer mats. Do you bring them with you?
I've got a really good beer mat magic trick. But it doesn't work on radio.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Is it the flicking one?
Mm.
Yeah.
It is.
No,
not that flicking one.
Okay.
It's a vertical flicking, but,
Because look how small my hands are, and my max is 12.
Wow. Okay, I've been out-tricked.
Is it just how many beer mats can you hold?
No, the flick and catch.
Oh, right.
Classic 90s game.
Okay,
Sean, you haven't lived. You haven't lived.
Well, you know the way, like, some people, this is completely off the subject, but they tear up bear mats.
Yes.
That was, makes me really anxious when I see somebody do that.
Well, years ago, didn't they say that was a sign of sexual frustration? That was a thing
we were
always told.
Or removing the labels from a bottle of beer. If you saw somebody doing that, they used to say that was a sign of
Or being outraged by having beer in the wrong glass.
No.
Yeah,
no,
possibly it.
Brand alignment.
Oh, I thought possible serious killer. Okay.
Well, it's taking a turn.
Right. So, Maya, you were looking over the Atlantic.
I was.
To how they were celebrating their 250.
Well, I wasn't annoyed by the July 4th celebrations themselves. I was annoyed, as usual, by their, you know, Commander-in-Chief, Donald Trump, and how he... I was saying to Donald outside, to quote Maya Angelou, like, you know, when people show you who they are, believe them. Now, how many times does this cretin have to show people who he is before they actually believe him? It was just... the whole thing was just obnoxious. And you have to ask, I mean, would any other president in history have celebrated such a momentous occasion with a cage fight on the White House lawn? And then also, like, you know, it was basically the first ever Brexit, wasn't it, 250 years ago? That's essentially what it was. It's not really a birthday. It was as such. And I keep thinking of the Native Americans. They must be going, 250? Hello? Sorry, my grandmother has stories older than that. But when the heat wave was announced, instead of caring or pretending to care about the people, he came out with, what was the line? I wrote it down somewhere where he said, I am going to make a really long speech just to show that I can do anything. Who says things like that? And then the fireworks that I think are still going on, because you said they will be the biggest firework display in history. I mean, it's just, it's enraging. It's enraging.
Yeah. On the other hand, for a little bit of balance here, it was a really good fight card at the White House, and Justin Gaethje was absolutely incredible to come back after being rocked in the second round. So, yeah, I'm not.
And did you watch it?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't stay up to watch it, but I watched it back being a fight fan. And
but you think it was appropriate to build an octagon on the White House lawn?
Yeah, well, I don't think it was appropriate, but I think it was a really good fight card. No, listen, I agree. I think Trump is a wonderful gentleman, but.
He's the ultimate Johnny Two Mickeys.
In the interest of something different in the sporting environment, an outdoor UFC fight on a special occasion, and the card was stacked. It was absolutely brilliant. So, yeah.
Don, I know we only go back minutes, but I just changed my opinion.
The thing is, though, when you said when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. I think most people do know who he is and what he is, other than a proportion of the American population who have somehow become hypnotized by him, and no matter what happens, they will still follow him, no matter what he says, what he does. He said he didn't care if the price of gas was going up because of the Iran war, hurting specifically the people who voted for him.
Yeah, but do you not think that maybe they are now, they're so deep that they don't want to admit they were wrong? Because the fact that this man who had a gold toilet managed to get people who were very poor to vote for him, you know, it speaks volumes about him. I mean, he is a good politician in those terms. But I think that it's a bit like, you know, the Farage fans in the UK. I think at this stage they go, we can't really backtrack now because we're too deep. But he's starting to unravel. Now, unfortunately, there's still 2 years left, but he is starting to unravel.
But is he the symptom or the cause?
I don't know.
Because people, like Americans, have traditionally voted for millionaires. You can't really be a member of Congress and not be a millionaire. So they voted for people who have no idea what life is like for them.
Yeah. And they put people in a position of celebrity, you know, when he was on The Apprentice and all that, on a pedestal. And people who are wealthy, they put on a pedestal. So,
but Americans do patriotism so well. They're so patriotic and actually a really endearing way a lot of the time. But I think, I don't know, he's starting to unravel. And I think the thing about the American patriotism used to be that everybody was a proper, you know, land of opportunity. When you saw them out with their hats and waving their flags, there was different socioeconomic groups, there was, you know, immigrant groups. And now the division. So he is, you know, he's certainly not the symptom. He is the cause of that division, I think.
I saw a lovely thing, which was the Oval Office under Obama, who decided not to follow the tradition of doing it up because we were in the middle of the global financial crisis. And then the side-by-side image of the Oval Office as it is now, kitted out in gold, like something your nan would have had in her parlour.
Yeah.
Did your nan have a gold parlour?
No.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't have garner. So are you, have you become a convert to the World Cup, Maya? Or?
No. What I learned was, again, I've been in the UK for the last few days. I've had the radio on a lot. Now, I know that the Brits are obsessed with football. Now, when it comes to the World Cup, if I could care less, I would, if that was possible. But they were obsessed. Now, obviously, we know they won overnight. I didn't stick to watch it, did you?
Nope.
Did you stick to watch
it? But it was a great match by all accounts, I believe it was.
But the every single radio station, the entertainment stations, the news station, we're talking about the pub extensions, they had several head teachers on discussing whether or not schools should be closed, angry parents saying, well, my kid's going to stay home. This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And I thought, guys, this is ludicrous. And then I thought, actually, Donna's looking at me there and he's giving me the head tilt.
Remember?
1990. You know, when we got to the quarterfinals, it's practically in our constitution now. So maybe we should cut them some slack. So, but we like bashing.
Is that just an anti-English sentiment? Because if we were in the situation where we're in the World Cup, we would be talking about closing businesses for the day and a public holiday. We'd bring back Jack Charlton.
But it's our job to knock them. Speaking of Jack Charlton, there was an interview with Jeff Hurst, who I think is the last surviving member of the 66 team. He said, people keep asking me, do I want them to lose so that I can still be the last surviving member? When he goes, I don't, I never said that. This poor octogenarian saying, I wish everyone well. So now, of course, we want them to win. I love the English.
But, and we're going back to Trump again, unfortunately. And a lot of people, the American team has a player called Balogun who was given a red card in the last match. That's an automatic ban for the next game. And Trump rang FIFA and got FIFA to reverse it. So FIFA are undermining their own competition by allowing an American team to cheat, basically.
I only heard that.
I am actually speechless.
There's nothing he can't poison if he's doing that.
I mean, what's that player's name? Balogun. Would you not, if he was him, say, look, I accept the red card, that's it, just on principle?
You'd have to.
Because it doesn't do that, it doesn't do the US team any favours either. Because it makes it look like, you know, you got a bit of a nudge in the future.
But was it FIFA that gave him the Peace Prize?
I know it's Infantani who lives in we all know where he lives, basically, yes. So you're looking forward to going camping?
Yes.
Very wholesome.
Very wholesome. And look, I'm not saying we are going to get away farting with the kids as well, but what we're doing this weekend coming is we are going camping. We've got the tent, we've got the air mattresses, we're bringing the George Foreman and a little thing to...
Is that still a thing, the George Foreman?
The George Foreman's still a thing, and you've got to get the electric cable so that you can convert from the main power supply down to your strip of plugs. But yeah, we're going wholesome, so we're doing a couple of nights, six of us in a tent. Tune in next week.
In the one tent?
Yeah, we've only got one tent.
Wow, you must really love your family, Donald.
Very close.
Yeah. Oh,
but I think there's something to it because, you know, they're in a privileged situation where they get to go on a holiday most years. And I think there's a lot of fun to be had when you get off the grid, a bit like Jody being down in the Gaeltacht. They've taken their phones from them. They're doing their ceilidhs and they're having the crack. And I think there's something, it is a little bit wholesome, isn't it?
Will you have a functioning toilet?
I would hope so. Okay. Now we're not going like completely off the beaten track. Okay. It's a campsite and there's a bar there and there's a, you know, restaurant stuff like that, you know. So, but I think it's back to basics.
Yeah.
And then we go farting.
And then you'll be eaten alive by midges. Poetry is what you're looking forward to. It's going to arrive. This is an interesting collection of poems.
Well, again, I spent so much time in the car. I was into BBC Women's Hour and they had this amazing woman on called Helen Mort, who has written a book of poetry called Stepmother. Now, I'm a stepmother. My stepson's actually 23 this week. But that tired old trope of the wicked stepmother that has never really been undone. And she's written this beautiful book of poetry called Stepmother, and she is... you know, essentially retelling the story and kind of undoing all those tired old narratives. Because, I mean, when you say stepmother, it's the wicked stepmother, the evil stepmother. And it goes, you know, back through fairy tales, back even further to, you know, Euripides. What was it? Quote, was it better to be a serpent than a stepmother? Every time I say Euripides, I want to say, Euripides, you pay for them.
Yes.
Anyone?
I forget the name of the woman who wrote this book called Step Monster.
There's been a lot of there's been a lot of female authors who have retold fairy tales. And of course, fairy tales were oral storytelling. So oral storytelling is meant to change. It's meant to be dynamic. It's meant to evolve. So people say, oh, this feminist retelling of old fairy tales. That's the way that they used to happen organically. And I know Louise O'Neill, one of our best authors here, has written one. She rewrote The Little Mermaid, I think. And then Angela Carter, who's God, I mean, she's the late Angela Carter, and then Emma O'Donoghue wrote one. So there's a kind of retelling of the old fairy tales, which actually does move away from that. But I've never seen a book before that's just about, you know, telling. And it's quite tongue-in-cheek as well. She wrote, there was a poem she read on the radio about what would happen if the stepmother and Cinderella, just if things just went a bit differently. So it just sounded funny and lighthearted and something that I would like to read. So I ordered it and it's coming this week.
Okay, because it is a weird trope that seems to have persisted. One texter says, I'm from the Gaeltacht. I was thinking about opening a tattoo studio. I thought about calling it Conas a Tattoo. May and Donald, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.